It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, oral arguments in the case over whether to continue the John Doe investigation into Governor Scott Walker's campaign activity began in Chicago this afternoon. We'll hear what's at stake.
First, it's the second installment of our series On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture. Each day this week at 5, we're looking at different aspects of Wisconsin's use and misuse of alcohol. Yesterday, we talked with the head of the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project about the economic cost of alcohol use in the state.
Today, we're talking to a doctor about how alcohol use affects the human body. Our guest is Dr. Rich Brown. He's a doctor and professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Brown, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get to the hazards, it gets a bit confusing because alcohol apparently has some health benefits. Let's start there. What are the health benefits of moderate alcohol use?
Well, it turns out that moderate drinking, either beer, wine, or hard liquor, can actually decrease the risk of heart attacks and strokes. But it's important that people understand what moderate drinking is.
Right. When do we cross that line from a moderate drinker to somebody who's doing more harm than good?
Well, before we can talk about moderate drinking, we have to agree on what a standard drink is. Mm. And that's the amount of alcohol contained in either 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of 80-proof liquor. So in terms of those standard drinks, when women have no more than one per day, when men have no more than one or two per day, that's when we see people reducing their risks of heart attacks and strokes. But the trick is that if people drink more than that, they actually have higher risk of heart attack and stroke than if they abstain.
And it sounds like it would be really easy to sneak ourselves across the line in the form of a mixed drink or how big a glass of wine we're drinking. We could end up in that bad zone pretty easily.
Exactly. When people pour drinks at home, often they're in excess of a standard drink. Long Island iced tea, for example, might have 4, 6, or 8 shots of liquor.
So how many drinks do we move into the binge drinking zone? How many drinks is considered binge drinking?
Well, binge drinking, and honestly, I prefer the term risky drinking. It's the amount of alcohol that starts to cause risk for health and social consequences on more of a momentary basis. So binge drinking would be considered more than 4 standard drinks in an occasion for a man and more than 3 standard drinks in an occasion for a woman.
So it's important. It may sound obvious, but an average of 1 or 2 drinks a day is not 14 drinks on Saturday or 7 on Friday, 7 or Saturday. Those are very different things.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't save up your drinks for the weekend.
So what are the health risks associated with excessive risky drinking?
Well, the first thing we see is that there are many more injuries. Excessive drinking is a major risk factor for injuries. And fortunately, they're often minor, but sometimes they can be quite catastrophic, even causing death or lifelong disability. And it's a shame that these kind of injuries tend to happen disproportionately to our young people, some of whom for which it's illegal to drink even.
Mm-hmm. And supposing we make it somehow through the accident-prone zone there in our binge drinking or excessive drinking, long-term, what kind of consequences, what kind of damage does excessive alcohol drinking do to us?
Well, the first thing that people tend to think of is liver disease, but actually liver disease has actually gone down quite a bit over the last several decades. We're not sure exactly why. Some people think maybe alcoholic beverages are a bit more pure, don't have some harmful chemicals that they used to have. It may also be that even people who have serious alcohol problems get better nutrition these days. So rather than initially thinking of the liver, we need to actually think more about the heart. Excessive drinking tends to raise blood pressure. It tends to aggravate high cholesterol, can make diabetes worse. So for all those reasons, people who drink excessively, especially over a number of years, are more likely to have heart attacks and strokes.
Well, looking back at the short term, how does alcohol affect our decision making? How does that work?
Yeah, very good question. You know, there's a part of our brain, it's in the front of our brain, and the purpose of that part of the brain is to have us to keep asking ourselves on a regular basis, might what I'm about to do hurt me? And alcohol actually reduces the function of that part of the brain. And that's especially important for young people to realize that part of the brain is not really fully developed until well into someone's 20s. So a young person is already at risk for engaging in risky activity. And with alcohol on top of that, reducing that behavioral filter function, they're more likely to engage in dangerous activities and hurt themselves.
Well, and if we were trying to evaluate something like, am I sober enough to drive, that altered decision-making might lead us to a faulty conclusion.
Absolutely. Another effect of alcohol is it impedes good judgment. It impedes cognition. So people are likely to make bad decisions.
So at what point does alcohol use become what we would consider alcoholism?
Yeah, so alcoholism is somewhat related to the quantity and frequency that people drink, but actually the number one risk factor for alcoholism is actually genetic. And what alcoholism is when the pleasure reward system gets hijacked. We all have this part of our brain, all animals do, that make us feel good when we've had a nice meal, so it rewards eating behavior. It makes us feel good when we have sex, so it keeps us procreating, keeping the species going. So that's nature's wiring to help us and our species survive. But what can happen, especially in genetically susceptible individuals, once they've had enough alcohol over time, that part of the brain can start driving drinking behavior either in addition or instead of eating and sexual behavior. So that part of the brain actually produces very strong urges and cravings for individuals to drink. And because it's coming, those feelings are coming from such a deep, primitive, strong part of the brain, it's very difficult for alcoholics to continually resist those strong impulses to drink.
With that genetic link in mind, you know, we want to know our family history, propensities for cancer, heart disease, things like that. Should we also be looking for family history of alcoholism and maybe avoiding alcohol if it's there?
Absolutely. And it's a shame, actually, that because there's so much stigma around alcoholism, often there are family secrets about who in the family has alcoholism. And a typical pattern we see, if a grandparent had alcoholism, the parents don't discuss it. And maybe the parents abstain because of the poor exposure they had to alcohol when they were growing up. But it's sad if they don't tell their children that their children might actually be at risk.
Well, speaking of children, I understand there's some new research out there on how alcohol affects children who use it. What kind of conclusions is this research showing us?
Yeah. Well, one conclusion is the one I mentioned earlier, that it's especially dangerous for young people to drink because they're already more likely to engage in risky behaviors. Another conclusion, very important, is that the earlier kids start drinking regularly, the more likely they will actually develop alcoholism as adults.
So how much drinking are we talking about? Are we talking about, my grandpa let me have a sip of his beer a couple times, or family dinner once a week? Do we know how much alcohol makes a difference for kids?
Well, there's no precise cutoff, mm-hmm. but we're not talking about an occasional sip. We're talking about regular consumption, certainly at least weekly, is my take from the research.
And do we know why that works that way, that exposure to alcohol makes a kid more likely to be alcoholic later?
Yeah, you know, we just don't know that quite yet.
We're not there. We had a caller yesterday in the first part of this series saying, normalize alcohol. Let kids have some beer or wine with dinner, and then they won't have that sort of fetish for it. It won't be the forbidden fruit when they grow up. They'll be less likely to be alcoholic. Sounds like what you're saying for this research is no.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, I heard the caller, and back then when that child was growing up, we didn't know what we know now. So it's just really important for parents to understand. Now it's very clear we want to keep our kids away from alcohol as long as we can. I know among some individuals in the state, the 21-year-old legal drinking age is not popular. But actually, that would keep a lot of kids out of trouble with alcoholism if we could help them avoid consuming alcohol till age 21.
And then children's brains, the long-term impact of alcohol on a developing brain. When we say child, how long a time span are we talking about? I've heard that our brains are still developing seriously into the mid-20s even.
Yeah, and brains continue to modify themselves and mature later in life as well. Yeah. So we certainly don't want to expose our brains to anything toxic, and alcohol certainly is toxic, especially in those quantities that we talked about that are risky to people's health.
We're talking to Dr. Rich Brown about how alcohol affects our bodies, our brains, our physical health as part of our series On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture.
And we're taking your calls on this, too. What questions do you have about how alcohol use changes your body? Do you drink alcohol for health benefits? And have you felt the effects of alcohol use on your own health? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Rich Brown about how alcohol affects the body.
And we're taking your calls. How do you see the effects of alcohol on your health? Do you drink alcohol for some of the health benefits you see in the paper sometimes? And do you have questions about how alcohol affects us, short or long term? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. To your calls in just a moment. But Dr. Brown, I understand that you have a lot of brain scans comparing how our brains work on and off alcohol. What kind of things do we see? How do they light up differently?
Yeah, well, they actually tell a fascinating story, and if you do a Google image search on PET scan alcoholism, these will come up. And the most instructive set of brain scans, basically shows how a normal pleasure reward center works, and then a comparison scan shows how the pleasure reward system truly is hijacked. It shows the brain scan of somebody who is addicted. And then for that same individual, it shows how the scan has almost come back to normal a couple of years later after that person stayed clean and sober. So the PET scans have really made it very clear that, number one, we can see that this is truly a disease of the brain, of the pleasure reward system. And, you know, it's not an anatomic disease. If we did a biopsy, if we removed some brain cells from an alcoholic pleasure reward center, they would look normal. But the PET scan shows us how brain cells function. And the scan shows us that those cells are functioning abnormally, just like some people with epilepsy have abnormal function of their brain cells. So the PET scans really make it clear that alcoholism is a disease just as much as epilepsy.
We'll get to our callers now. We've got Lisa on the line in Green Bay. Lisa, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two brief comments and then a question. My father was an alcoholic, referring to your guys' talk on family inheritance and the genetics of alcoholism. My father is an alcoholic for about 10 years, and of course, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, so he is recovering. And his brother is an alcoholic for life. He will die from his alcoholism, most likely. And to put it briefly, my father's alcoholism caused huge dramatic effects on my life and also the way I choose to use alcohol. Regarding why children who drink, people who drink earlier in life may have alcoholism affect them more in later on in life, just the thought that I wanted to put out there because it has crossed my mind as being somebody in a situation. I started drinking hard liquor when I was 14, and I pretty much didn't stop binge drinking until I was 22, 23. Three years it was more mild, but one thing that I come to find is that it's a sort of a comfort thing. Not only do I have the environmental triggers of having my father be an alcoholic, but just in my own right, I find myself when I'm down or out or whatever, feeling I need a drink, that it's because I've always felt that way. I've had it for so long already, even though I'm so young. And then my question was for the doctor. You mentioned that the health effects, instead of thinking about your liver, think about your heart. I was wondering what research you might have or know about the effects on kidneys, considering there are filters for our body, and is that a link between alcoholism and increased kidney problem?
Gotcha. Lisa, thanks for the call. Let's start with that question, the kidney.
Yeah, you know, alcohol has some effects on the kidneys, but it's not the organ that people typically run into problems with. Yes, the kidney does filter, and alcohol can pass freely through the kidney into the urine. The part of the body that's really responsible for processing the alcohol and therefore the part of the body that's more exposed to its toxic effects is the liver. Mm-hmm. So most people will end up with liver problems way before they end up with kidney problems. But I do want to comment. Thanks for telling your story. It really illustrates some key points that alcohol is such a trap for young people. When you were 14 and you were drinking because it felt good, it helped you cope. Yeah, that is clearly one of the ways that alcohol makes us feel good. And it's only when you got older and could really bring some mature judgment to the situation, you realize that it's time to slow down your drinking. So that's the trap for kids, is that kids often don't have the judgment. And it's a great illustration that the more we can do in our state and around our country to help kids stay away from alcohol, the more we can prevent them from developing alcohol-related harms and perhaps alcoholism in later life.
Lisa, thanks for the call, and good luck to you and your family. We'll go to Larry in Dubuque now. Larry, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, on a side note, I do drink alcohol now, and I enjoy a beer with dinner, stuff like that. But during college, it was very tough because even in late high school and early college, I was against drinking completely because I felt I didn't need it to really have fun, as you often hear. So going to different parties with a roommate or friends, people will just be so dumbfounded that you would decline a drink from them, and they just wouldn't accept your answer, where they keep asking, well, why don't you want a drink? You just say, well, you know, I don't want one, whatever. So I feel like the social pressure is very difficult when our culture just promotes this high type of drinking anyway.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. That's a lot for public health people, for doctors to contend with, that massive social pressure to drink.
Yeah, and that is a huge issue, especially in our state where we lead the nation in binge drinking. When UW-Madison was keeping track, as I recall, about 65% of undergrads were engaging in binge or risky drinking at least once every 2 weeks. And it really does set up a harmful environment for individuals like you who prefer not to drink. So that's one of the reasons we really have to figure out how to change our alcohol culture to keep more people safe from binge drinking.
Larry, thanks for the call. To Reggie now with us in Milwaukee. Reggie, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I just had one question. What does the doctor have, information you have on how alcohol affects intestinal health?
Interesting. So alcohol and our digestive system, the intestines.
Yeah. Actually, alcohol tends to be much more damaging to the stomach than the intestines. The stomach has, as I'm sure you know, the stomach produces acid to help with digestion. But the stomach lining protects the stomach from the effects of the acid after it produces it. Alcohol, unfortunately, disrupts the stomach lining, so it makes the lining of the stomach more susceptible to burning from the acid. And if that alcohol exposure occurs and the inflammation occurs over time, people can develop an ulcer. And if that irritation continues, some people actually develop cancer of the stomach.
So a lot of health-related problems to overconsumption of alcohol. How are doctors trying to contend with this? I know you work on screening programs for doctors to talk to patients about alcohol. What are you doing?
Yes, I direct a program at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health called WIPHL, W-I-P-H-L, the Wisconsin Initiative to Promote Healthy Lifestyle. And what we do is tend to help clinics around the state systematically ask their patients about their drinking. And if somebody says yes to some initial questions, we ask some more questions. And there's lots of research that shows if we can just have fairly brief conversations with people to get them to think about the pros and cons of their drinking, how their drinking relates to what's important to them in their lives, many people will make a spontaneous decision to drink less and keep themselves much safer from injuries, developing alcoholism in the long term, and lots of other negative impacts on their health, families, et cetera. So we've have a very successful program. We've helped dozens of clinics initiate these services. And one of the keys to success we've learned is we have to expand the healthcare team. Present doctors and physician assistants, nurse practitioners and nurses, although they clearly could learn to administer these services, they just don't have enough time. So we help clinics hire health educators. We train those health educators. And we've documented that those health educators do a great job at helping people reducing their drinking. And they're so successful, we're actually finding that these services also reduce the cost of health care. So what better service could there be than something that helps people be healthier and decreases costs at the same time?
We'll leave it there for now. Rich, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks very much for having me.
That was Dr. Rich Brown. He's a doctor and professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, with us to discuss the effects of alcohol on our health.